You're listening to the True Life Church podcast. To learn more about True Life Church, including our service times in Melbourne, Florida, join us online at truelifemelbourne.com or find us on Facebook. Today's message comes from lead pastor Joshua Smith.
We've been in this series for the last few weeks. We're shifting everything back a week, so we didn't talk about on the live stream what was going to be our next message. So if you watched live stream, cool. If you didn't, cool. We're going to pick right back up where we were. And we've been hopefully letting God renovate rooms in our house, letting him make us into a new person. And there's a few highlights, I guess. I just want to recap from where we've been. Number one is that we watch a lot of HGTV, or there's tons of shows on the network or whatever, on the TV about DIY and update this and update that. Tons of homes being redone and TV shows about them. We forget one crucial thing, that Jesus is the best interior designer that there has ever been. And we get a lot of wrapped up into how things look and the face of things. When Jesus says, you know, I want to come and I'm going to redo your interior. I'm going to redo your insides, because only I can. No TV show, no, you know, doctor can even help you with this stuff. This is stuff that God can fix. And he can fix it because he made it. One of the other things we need to kind of remember this morning is that our lives essentially come down to this question. Did you allow God to renovate your life? Did you allow God to renovate your life? See, it's not enough at the end of your time on earth. It's not enough to just know of the contractor. Did you allow him to do work inside of you? Is your life different? Are you saved because of what he's done? And a lot of people, I think, are going to come to the end of their life and have known of Jesus or went to church once or whatever, but he's done no work on the inside. And they're going to be in a tough spot. Because, like, well, I know the contractor. I know the builder. No. You didn't allow him to actually do anything with your life. See, God recognizes his work. Jesus knows whether or not he's done the work inside of you. Any builder, any contractor, I'm thinking of Preston, Mike Vino, anybody who even makes stuff like cakes or bakes things, you know your handiwork, don't you? Creative arts or graphics, music, any creative type of stuff, you understand when you make something, it's like, that's mine. Like, I created that. And you know what your work looks like, even cleaning a house. You know what your work looks like. Because if someone else even tried to help clean, they wouldn't be able to do it just right. Because you know where everything goes, and this little blanket is catty-cornered this way on the couch, and this little thing goes over there, right? You understand when it's something that you're in charge of, something you created, you know what your work looks like. It's the same for God. He knows what his work looks like inside of us, when it's present and when it's not. And we're not going to be able to come to the end of our life and say, I know of you. It's like, no, you didn't let me renovate your life. This past week, my house was probably one of the 480 that lost power here in Brevard County. I don't know exactly how many it was. And so our house is all boarded up, and we lost power. And I mistakenly armed my 2-year-old son with two things because the power went out. Number one was a harmonica. Number two was a flashlight. No, it's not a strobe light. It's just regular old flashlight. And man, no pun intended, it lit up his world. You know, like this flashlight they held, and it was totally dark. And wherever he would like point it, and he was like, oh, and he'd turn and blind us. We're like, no, Landon, it's like 5,000 lumen LED just burned into our, you know, I was like, no, point at the floor. Point at the floor where you want to go. And he just walked around. Man, he was set with that flashlight for like, it was 2.5 hours or something like that. He had that flashlight like the entire time. He loved it. And then the power came back on. He didn't need it anymore. And I was sitting there thinking about that and watching that in the dark. And the flashlight only works where you point it. So the whole house is dark, but we could only see where he pointed the flashlight. And just like what we're talking about in this series, you got to let the light point into the darkness in your life. Because the stuff that we're talking about is only going to work if you let God, the light, shine into that dark place and do the work there for you to see where to go. It's not enough to be in the dark seeing that the light is over there. Be in the light. Now, it might not make sense so much. This analogy made a lot more sense under the hat. But just watching my son go around this dark house, I'm like, this is exactly what we're talking about. He's going room to room with a flashlight, seeing what he can point out and where he can go. And so far, we've talked about the importance of letting God renovate our lives. Now, first, we talk about that you are a person with value and a person, therefore, worth fixing. God looks at you and sees worth and the possibility of redemption. He says, you're not worth throwing away. You're worth so much more than that. You're not garbage. And a lot of people today, that's exactly what they feel like. They feel worthless. And it's impossible to feel worthless when you know Jesus, because he died for you. Wow. So we talked about the importance of letting God renovate your life, that you are a person with value, worth fixing. We've talked about letting God update our kitchen. That was the first room we did. And that's talked about preparing him, setting aside some time and intentionality with God instead of microwaving our spiritual lives with him. Oh, quick, 2 seconds to pray. God, thank you for our food. Amen. And then that's it. And for some people in here, and I guarantee out there, if that's what your faith looks like every day, that's not faith. That's just ritual. Faith is a relationship. We talked about that with our kitchen. We talked about letting God renovate our family room or living room, giving God the right to get comfortable in our lives, and or remembering how holy and how powerful he is. My brother-in-law was here that Sunday, and he came over the house to watch some football. And he walked in the room, he's like, hey, do I got refrigerator rights? And I'm like, yeah, man, you know where it is. You go get yourself a Dr. Pepper. We've also talked about letting God, in our last time, renovate our bathroom for him to clean out some junk. And hopefully that message has sit with you. That's all that stuff's up on the podcast if you want to follow along with that. And we're going to move on today. And we're going to renovate the bedroom. We're moving through the house. And there are two things that a bedroom is usually used for. One of those is rest. So I'm not going to dwell too long on this first thing because it's actually very simple. You just have to do it. And for many of us, falling asleep might take a little bit, but once you're like asleep, you're kind of good, right? Until you wake up or your alarm goes off or the baby monitor screams again. And you have to go in there, all right? But being asleep takes very little effort, right? You just actually have to make time every day to go to bed. And so I'm not going to dwell too long on this first part of renovating our bedroom because it should be simple. Resting in the Lord should be simple. You just have to actually do it and make time to do it. I don't read one of my favorite passages. We've actually already mentioned it. This thing's so wobbly. Wow. Hold on, music stand. You can do it. Bless you. I want to read Psalm 46. Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. Selah. And that was meant to be just a moment. We're just going to sit and think about that for a moment. You can do that at home right now. We're going to keep reading. Verse 4, there's a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations rage, the kingdoms totter. He utters his voice, the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Selah. Verse 8. Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolations on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Selah. And you have to make time in your life to rest in the Lord. What the psalmist is essentially saying here is like, hey man, my world's falling apart. There are wars going on. There are conflicts in my life. It seems like everything that I care about is breaking. Everyone ever felt like that before? Gosh, I have. Like, what is going on in my life right now? Like, why all at once? And in the midst of that, he's saying, you know what? We just need to stop freaking out about everything. Stop trying to do everything. And just be still. That's the words of the Lord. Be still and know that I am God. In other words, rest. Rest in me. Like sleepy night's time. Be still and know that I am God. That's why I love getting out in nature. And just kind of, we're gracious to have this beach here next to us, a few miles away, and just go sit. And I want to challenge you. Find 1 hour this week. 1 hour. You have 167 other hours. Take one. Take 1 hour this week, every single one of you. Turn off your phone. Turn off the TV. Get away from it. No computer, no laptop, no media. Get away from your kids. Get away from your spouse. A pastor told me to do it. Bye. Right? I know for a lot of you it might be like at night when the kids are asleep. That's going to be my story. But find 1 hour this week and get alone with God. Bring your Bible, flip through it, pray, journal. I have like 6 of them that I carry around with me at all times. They're in my backpack, which is in my office right now. Some of you have seen, I was showing Grace this. We're meeting to talk about worship leader stuff. I pulled out my brain because it's like 4 journals. Like, okay, is it this one, this one? No, that's 2016. Like, and I still carry them all with me to journal stuff. Find 1 hour. I guarantee you have it. But you have to choose to put down the Xbox. You have to choose to not watch the TV. You have to choose to not let your brain wander about different things about work. And make a choice and rest. Resting in the Lord is actually simple. You just have to choose to do it. I guarantee you, if you take 1 hour of your week this week to do that, you'll want another hour next week. And the week after that, you're like, 1 hour, not enough. That was good. Let's do 2. And suddenly, you're resting in the Lord. Your spirit is at ease. And you're not worried about everything that the world's bringing your way. Because the mountains might be falling in, but God speaks and the earth melts. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth, says the Lord. Let him be exalted in your life first. There are 2 things, again, that a bedroom is usually used for. This is why we're letting God renovate our bedroom today. And the first one is rest, and the second is probably, no one wants to say it. This is why we let the kids out for sermons like this every once in a while. Sex. Boom. Sex is not a dirty word. We've made it dirty. But sex is not a dirty word. We like to shy away from it in a church because church and sex are not 2 words that we ever think should be talked about in the same sentence. So just pull up your Pampers right now and just get over it if this is bothering you. We think that Because in today's world, more than any other time, sex has been perverted. It absolutely has. Now, there's always been brothels and like whorehouses and places, women of the night, and all that kind of stuff, where, you know, guys without consciences, without morals, without character or integrity would go to these places, but other people knew they were there. Like, oh, where were you last night, Bill? whoops. Yeah, yeah, so-and-so was talking to so-and-so. We knew where you were. That's right. It's places of ill repute, right? So those places have existed for a long time. But I'm going to tell you what. Computers and media and technology of today has turned almost every house in America into a whorehouse. I'm going to get on a soapbox for a minute. Bear with me. The prefrontal cortex is the PFC, so what we'll call it from now on, because I don't want to stand here and say prefrontal cortex over and over again. So the PFC is the front part of your brain. And in the front part of your brain, this is what gives you kind of identity and pleasure parts of your brain, stuff that dopamine and things are released from this part of your brain to encourage or stimulate whatever's going on in your life right then, right? And elite athletes, like high-caliber athletes, not like Tennessee, but high-caliber athletes have been shown to have heightened prefrontal cortexes, right, and neuroreceptors. So they've got a bigger, more vibrant front part of their brain. On the flip side, numerous studies on pornography have shown that pornography destroys this front part of your brain. I'll include the links to these studies on this week's podcast on our website if you're curious. But people who consistently watch pornography have been shown to have fewer brain cells up here. Let that sink in for a second. You may have noticed my shirt today. It's bold. I like it. Maybe you can or can't read it. It says, "Porn kills love." I'm wearing it for a reason. This is from a company called, or organization called, Fight the New Drug. And they're leading the front edges of research on pornography because it's basically like cocaine. And no one's talking about it. And we're going to talk about it because of what we're going to talk about next. NBA player Lamar Odom is part of this. Olympic runner Nick Willis and former NFL player and actor Terry Crews. He's hilarious, right? The big old black funny dude, right? You know, muscles, he's rocking one of these shirts too. Terry Crews is in with this. And the entire Kansas City Royals baseball team, you may or may not know this, has partnered with Fight the New Drug to say, hey, look, this is important. It's not even damaging, not just damaging people's brains, it's ruining people's lives. And someone's got to take a stand, and someone's got to talk about it. And I know what I'm talking about because I've been there. When I was 18 in high school, I had a friend, obviously not a good friend, but a friend who thought it would be great for when I turned 18. I actually graduated when I was 19. We went to this thing when my twin sister and I were little called TK1. I don't even think it exists anymore. It does. TK1 exists. Cool. All right. I'm old. So we were older than everybody else, and I turned 18, and he thought it would be really funny to go into this place in the Melbourne Mall called the Tobacquery. Anyone remember that? It's a long time ago. And he went in there, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to get your first little porno, right? And, yeah, no. I didn't want it, but I kept it. Just in case for whatever, right? Eventually got thrown away, but a seed was planted. And then I went to college at USF, became physically intimate with my fiance. I thought we were getting married, let my guard down. Cool. No, wait, she cheated on me. That was all bad. And because I'd been physically intimate, then there was a void there because I'd been used to something, and then that something was taken away. So what did I turn to? Huh. There's that little thing that used to be kept under the bed. And it got worse. And it got worse. And I made a few poor one-night choices before I got in contact with Lisa. And I brought all of this baggage and this burden into our relationship. and I am single-handedly responsible for almost ruining, because of this, our first year and a half of marriage. We almost might not even be married right now. But I was thankful, still am, to have a wonderful wife who stuck with me through that and helped me get out of that with God's help also. So I know what I'm talking about. And I had to let God renovate my bathroom and come clean, like you talked about last time. And that's why this series is so important, if you actually apply it, because you have to actually apply it. The flashlight has to be pointing into your darkness. And because of that, fortunately, on the other side of that, years out now, thankfully, I've helped coach and encourage other men to get out of that darkness and stop perverting what should be pure. And if you're one of those guys today just sitting there quietly in your seat, but knowing that I'm talking to you right now, stop lying to yourself. You're doing incredible damage to not only yourself right now, but any potential relationship you may ever be in the future. Message me privately, talk to me, send me an email, I don't care. But it's time to do something about that today. Because what they're discovering in our sex-fueled culture is that kids are being drawn to pornography at the age of 9 and 10 and 11. It's crazy, right? Connor, this, you probably know this word, right? You know the word I'm talking about, right? Pornography, you've heard of that? Yeah. I had no idea what that was when I was his age. Not anymore. So we have to talk about this. And women listening today, this is why it matters what you wear and what you don't. Hear me out. There are a few passages in the New Testament people nowadays like to pick on about women not wearing their hair in braids or jewelry. Like, that's stupid. My hair's in a braid on Wednesdays. Or I wear jewelry and I like it. And too many people are like, oh, that's dumb and that doesn't apply today. But what Paul and Peter's point was to dress without encouraging a guy to think even worse thoughts than he probably already has bouncing around in that dumb old noggin of his. Guys already have it very difficult in today's world to just walk around and try not to be tempted. When it seems like high school girls are in an unpublished contest to see who can wear the least amount of clothes. And lingerie fashion shows are promoted on major networks on TV. There they are for everyone to see. And we don't want to actually admit that Victoria's Secret should have been kept to herself. Many women today are saying through various movements and hashtags, well, I don't want to be objectified. Well, then stop making yourself into an object. You want to make your inside, your renovated inside, shine? Put a little bit more on the outside. Make that boy curious. Make that boy want to get to know you instead of showing him almost everything he'd get on the wedding night on the first date. And you may be sitting here today, we're like, well, I don't watch pornography, and I dress pretty modestly. This doesn't apply to me, but here's where we're building to. Listen, no one is exempt from the point of this today, because at some basic level, you have let your intimacy with God be sacrificed on the altar of selfishness. Whether it's pornography, that's selfish. Whether it's what you want to do, your agenda, your time, your goals, your dreams, your desires, your work, your busyness, your school, or anything else that falls in there, at some point in the game of your life that has led to this moment, what has supposed to be kept pure has been twisted and tainted. And at some basic level, every single one of us have sacrificed intimacy with God upon the altar of selfishness. And because sex in our culture has become so tainted and twisted, we have then let it domino effect into ruining our understanding of intimacy. And so now we don't understand intimacy, because now intimacy just means physical or sexualness. Connection, especially if you're a guy, you're like, ooh, physical, yes, right? And so it's domino affected into this just flushes downward, spirals, because sex and intimacy has been perverted. We no longer understand what intimacy should be with God. The definitions of intimacy is, here we go. Number one, the state of being intimate. Number two, a close, familiar, and usually affectionate or loving personal relationship with another person or group. Number three, a close association with or detailed knowledge or deep understanding of a place, subject, or period of history. Like you have a deep intimacy with history of World War II or something, right? Definition number four, an act or expression serving as a token of familiarity, affection, or the like, to allow the intimacy of using first names, for example. Like, it's not Mr. Smith anymore, or Pastor Smith, it's just Josh. Cool, that's some level of intimate right there. Definition number five, an amorously familiar act, liberty. And definition number six, and the last one, sexual intercourse. For most of us today, I would posit that number six, we actually think is number one. And it's not at all. I saw an article this week doing some sermon prep that said that intimacy with God should not be compared to sex. And you know what? I actually got to be totally honest. I totally disagree with that. Here's why. Not because of what sex is physically, but because of what it's meant to be. Sexual intimacy is the highest state of vulnerability and connectedness that you can be with another human being. Married people, you know this. It's meant to be pure and saved for marriage. For those of you who have made a commitment and covenant with each other, this is why sex before marriage makes the marriage harder when you do get married later. Because the most sacred space the marriage has been passed around like a Chili's appetizer or a game of catchphrase. But when it's reserved for the secret place, it is special beyond words. And because sex has perverted our culture, has perverted our understanding of it, intimacy, and also then perverted what we think intimacy with God should or could be like. We're talking about renovating the bedroom, right? The reality of all this intimacy is that the bedroom is the sanctuary of the house. Just leave that there for a second. It's the sacred space. When you need to get away from the kids, where's one of the probably only places you might be even able to go? The bedroom. Where you go to rest? The bedroom. Where do you go to be intimate with your spouse? The bedroom. The bedroom is the sanctuary of the house. A long, long time ago, there's this place called Israel. And in this land called Israel, there was a king. This king was called Solomon. Solomon built a temple. And he built a temple based on what it had been when it was tents and stuff that could travel around with Moses and the Israelites in the desert. So they used the same schematic and just blew it up a whole bunch larger. And I want you to, even if you have to close your eyes right now, I want you to take on a little journey with me. We're going way, way, way back in time. And I want you to imagine like a five-story building with walls all around it like a courtyard. Close your eyes if you have to. And so we're standing outside of this building. Magnificent stone, gold on the outsides, nice wall. And we're going to go 12 steps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Why were there 12? How many tribes were there? Thank you. Okay. So we've got one step for each tribe, and we come now into the lower gate. Now we're in the outer quarter, the women's hall. And here there's the chamber of lepers, the chamber of oils, of wines, and wood, and the chamber of Nazarites. And this is when Jesus comes in the temple and drives people out. This is where those things happen. This is where the lepers and those people like that get healed. And they're waiting, right? Begging for anything as the rich people come in and out of the temple to give their sacrifices. So we're in this outer court, right? Surrounded by this wall. We still haven't gotten to the big old glorious Goldie building yet. And now we're going to walk into another area divided by another wall through the Nicanor gate. And now we're in the Israelites' hall and the priests' hall. There's still no roof yet. It was just called these different areas, right? And we're still getting closer and closer to approaching this wonderful, amazing white stone gold structure we're not even close to yet. And in this, you know, Israelites and priests hall, you have the brazen altar and the sacrifice gate. And this is where you would go for the to give sacrifices for the sins, whether it's doves or lambs or whatever it was. That's where those things would be happening. So there's constantly this fire being burned there, and you can smell stuff fragrant often because of incense and things being just given off in this area. And we're not even inside the actual temple yet. And so now we go 12 more steps up, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, into a vestibule and the holy place. And now we're finally inside of a building, this big building we're talking about, but we're still technically not in the temple. And this gorgeous gold-covered area with cherubim and decorations and stuff everywhere, and incense altars and candlesticks, and now it's quiet, and now it's reserved, and now it's special. And not everybody's allowed in here. And then at the end, you see this huge, tall curtain, taller than this room is, of blue and red and purple, interlaced with gold. And behind this curtain, this huge, heavy curtain, there is the Holy of Holies. And in this small, quiet, sacred space sits the Ark of the Covenant, usually covered by this fabric thing that the same word is used for curtain here is barrier. And it's also often used to describe what would be on top of the Ark of the Covenant being covered up until one day a year when the high priest and only the high priest on the Day of Atonement once a year would be allowed to go through the curtain into the Holy of Holies and talk with God. One man, one day a year, the holy place. And this fabric that would cover the Ark of the Covenant is actually almost very close to the same word that is used to say mercy seat. Anyone ever heard Jesus sitting on the mercy seat? You know what that means? Now you do, hopefully. Because Jesus in this is seated the King of Kings and Lord of Lords inside this Holy of Holies in a gorgeous temple surrounded by all of these walls and sacrifices being given up. And as we go deeper and deeper and deeper into the temple, it becomes less and less and less people who are allowed to go that far until finally it's just one, the high priest. And this is the beauty of Christ's death and resurrection, because what was torn in the temple from top to bottom when he died? That curtain, gone. And for the first time, what God was saying is, you know what? You are in. You don't have to be a high priest to come in on one day a year and be intimate with God. Everyone gets this access to me that they have never had before because of Jesus. And you and I forget what intimacy could be with God, because our culture has just put a barrier right back up in front of it, trying to distract us, trying to get us unfocused, trying to get us discouraged, or that's not possible, or how could you be one-on-one with God like that? He's a million miles away floating and creating galaxies or playing tic-tac-toe behind your back or something with a giant old beard. What? That's cartoons and stuff, man. That's a joke. You know what is real? Intimacy with God. I asked you if you were watching Facebook Live last week, which I almost put a joke this past week on our Facebook page. I'm like, hey, due to the overwhelming presence of Facebook followers on last week's video, we're just not going to gather at church anymore. We're just going to be totally virtual. That went really well. So if you were following last week, I asked you a question. said, the question was, where would you be in the crowd with Jesus? So Jesus is walking around town and people are being healed and there's crowds following all around, probably wanting food and to witness a miracle and all that kind of stuff. Where are you in that crowd? Are you watching from a distance? Are you just kind of observing? Because the reality is that Jesus only healed people he was face to face with. Could he have healed someone 20 miles away? Sure, done. Did he? No. Not one time ever recorded in the Gospels did Jesus do that. We're going to read a passage here where Jairus' daughter was healed from a distance, but Jairus is there face to face in person on his hands and knees saying, Jesus, help me. Someone was still there face to face. I want to read this. Luke chapter 8, verse 40. When Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him, for they were all waiting for him. Jesus, show us something. And there was a man named Jairus who was a ruler of the synagogue, and at falling at Jesus' feet, bowing like we sang earlier, but didn't do, because, you know, that would be weird to bow in church. And bowing in front of Jesus, he implored him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she was dying. As Jesus went, the people pressed around him. And there was a woman, I love how just we switch stories. Just kind of leave that there for a second. And as Jesus went, the people were pressing in around him. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for how long? Also 12 years, 12 steps. The daughter was 12 years old, right? A discharge for 12 years, and though she had spent all her living on physicians, she spent every penny on health care. She could not be healed by anyone. So she came up behind Jesus. And she touched the fringe of his garment. And immediately her discharge of blood ceased. And Jesus is being pressed in on all sides by all these people. Everyone is touching in and pressing on him. But he knows something is different. Out of all the people reaching out and trying to touch Jesus and pressing in on him, one person is special. And Jesus said, who is it to touch me? When all denied it, Peter said, Master, there's like people around you. Like, dude, you're in a mob scene right now. Like, this is a mosh pit going on. What do you mean, who touched me? Jesus said, someone touched me, for I perceive that power has gone out from me. And when the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him, declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him. And she publicly came clean. That's her renovating the bathroom moment right there in front of everybody. This embarrassing stuff, this past, this medical problem that you didn't really want to talk about. Even today, you probably still wouldn't want to wear a shirt that said, hi, I'm bleeding. It's so awkward, right? And I know, right? Who does that? So this lady has to come clean in front of everybody. She's shaking and she's scared. And immediately she was healed. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. I love this because Luke set the stage earlier about someone else's daughter who needed to be healed, right? This is not that daughter, yet what does he call her? Daughter. Child of mine. Intimate relationship. And while he was still speaking, someone from the ruler's house, Jairus' house, came and said, you know, your daughter is dead. Jesus, you took too long being, you know, the pop star. Don't even trouble this guy anymore. She's dead. But Jesus, on hearing this, answering him, don't fear, only believe, and she will be well. And when he came to the house, he allowed no one to enter with him except Peter and John and James and the father and the mother of the child. And all were weeping and mourning for her. But he said, don't weep, for she's not dead but sleeping. And they laughed at Jesus. I know what a dead person is, Jesus. I know what death is.
I might not be a smart man. I know what dead is.
And taking her by the hand, he called, saying, again, daughter, now, child, arise. And her spirit returned, and she got up at once, and he directed that something should be given her to eat. Like, yeah, she was dead. Now she's alive. Hungry, feed her. And her parents were amazed, and he charged them to tell no one what had happened. Where are you in the crowd with Jesus today? Because I'm going to be honest. If you're not up close and personal with Jesus, you may be desiring a healing or a miracle that ain't going to never happen. Because you're at a distance. And everything we learn from Jesus in the Gospels is saying, come close. Come into the holy place. Come into the place that was so holy, you wouldn't have even been allowed in, but I've made a way. Like, well, how do I be intimate with God? Follow the example of the lady who was bleeding. Falling on her knees, sharing absolutely everything from her past that had damaged her, that had hurt her, all of her past medical history, lay it all out there. In front of other people, even if you have to. Because Jesus already knows what's going on in your life, yet you're trying to keep things to yourself. That's not intimacy. That's hoarding. And if you want freedom, if you want the definition of intimacy that says freedom, liberty, then you got to come clean and you got to get on your hands and knees before the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords and whatever your holy place looks like at home. And be intimate, 100% vulnerable and connected with Jesus. Because some of you might want your lives turned around. It's probably not going to happen on a Sunday. It might be a Tuesday night. It might be in your dorm room. Where you just broken. You say, God, I'm going to lay this all out at your feet. I got a past. I got a problem. And I give up. I surrender. I need you more than ever. I need you more now than I did yesterday. I'll need you more tomorrow than I did today. Because in order for my house to actually be renovated, it's going to take some work. But I believe. And I have faith. I don't know what the end result is going to look like right now. But I'm trusting in the contractor to build something amazing in my life if I give him the keys. Man, it's time we went back to being intimate with God. We have lost it. We have made church a show. And I'm not talking just here. It's like church in America. And we're there to be entertained, and if the song is done that we don't like, I don't know if the patch or priest is the 1204. We got a problem with that. It's 1204, by the way. You know, if the service goes over, I don't know. I got other places to be. I got my agenda. I got my things. And we're like, hey, we're just gonna. This has nothing to do with intimacy with God. This fits into our schedule. I'm going to invite the band up. We're going to sing one more song today. It's a new song for us, but Rachel had kind of said, I'd like to do this song. It was weeks and weeks ago, start learning it. And we were messaging this past week. I'm like, I think we should just do it. Like, it's the right song for the right Sunday. It's called Throne Room. And not only is it what we've talked about today, but it's what hopefully God is doing in our lives. to say, you know what? Come back and be intimate with me. Because I've already torn the veil. I've already ripped the curtain down. The barrier is gone. What's holding you back? I just want us to be on our hands and feet in the face of, before God. And it might be weird to kneel where you're at. You know what? I don't care. And if anybody else around you cares, that's their problem. It might feel weird to raise your hands or to cry or to sing something that's not on screen. I don't care. That's what intimacy with God is, between you and Him. You and Him. It is between you and Him. So listen to me. It's between you and Him. Elohim. Yes. Elohim. Oh, man. I was going good. Thank you. Thank God. That's intimacy right there. Being vulnerable. And I just want to worship with you guys. That's why we did another song earlier that wasn't planned at all. Like, worship is one of the most intimate things we can do with God. Because He works on us as we sing. Something happens. And it's different from being at a football game. It's different from singing the Eagles in my car. It's different. And I can't put words on it. And I've been leading worship for 14 years. And I still don't know. But it's a holy of holies place. And God just lets us in. So you are invited to be your own worship leader for this last song today. Stand if you want to stand. Sit if you want to sit. Be on your knees if you want to be on your knees. Go to the back. Go to the front. Lift your hands. Cry. Sing words that aren't up on the TVs. I don't care. You're your own worship leader. I invite you to join us as we sing Throne Room Song.